Hideki Matsuyama wins the Masters, Julian Edelman retires, and Steph Curry becomes the Warriors' all-time leading scorer. LaValley Sports Talk begins right now. What's going on, everybody? Welcome into another edition of the LaValley Sports Talk Podcast, brought to you by the Sideline Network. As always, I'm your host, Chris LaValley. Hope you all are doing well and staying safe. Let's kick off the pod and let's recap the Masters. So Hideki Matsuyama became the first Japanese golfer to win the Masters at 10 under par. What Matsuyama did under pressure and what he was able to accomplish, not just for himself, but for his home country, is just an absolutely incredible feat and should not be overlooked. It was watching him win the Masters, just, it was really cool. It was a really cool feeling when you start hearing Jim Nance and the other commentators talk about what Matsuyama means for Japanese golf, for what he means to that country, and how winning the Masters is such a monumental feat for them, especially obviously given the fact that he's the first Japanese golfer to ever win. I thought that was really cool. And it's really hard not to root for the guy too. You've heard he's always hung around in the leaderboard. I've seen Matsuyama. I've never really followed him very closely. But if you look back and you see, he's had a lot of top 10 finishes in majors over the past 4 to 5 years. And you've heard stories, or at least I've heard stories from other broadcasts about how all the other golfers on the PGA Tour absolutely love this guy. They respect him. They respect his work ethic. And that apparently he couldn't be a nicer person. So good for him. I mean, it's a feel-good story. I mean, how can you not be pumped about somebody like Matsuyama winning his first major, especially being at the Masters? So I think that storyline is really, really good. And I honestly think it's been undersold. And I'm going to touch in a moment, or in a little while anyway, about how I've been reading articles about how people said that the Masters was no good because Tiger didn't play. And I think that's horse manure. But we'll get on that in a moment. So I want to go on to all the other notable scores and stories that surrounded this Masters, because I while it may not have been the most compelling Masters of all time, there's a lot of interesting storylines that I think people have just, for whatever reason, haven't been paying attention to. So you had Will Zalatoris, who was competing in his first Masters, and he finished second at 9 under par. This kid was awesome. Never heard of him before. Young kid, played incredible golf all weekend, hit under par in every day of the tournament. And how awesome is it that in your first Masters, you come from one shot away from winning it? Obviously, it would have been an even better story if he actually ended up winning the Masters. But you come in second in your first Masters. I mean, if that's not an incredible feeling, I don't know what is. And then we get to Xander Schauffele, who had an opportunity to make things really interesting coming up the stretch on Sunday. Like, he was nipping at Matsuyama's heels. And you could kind of, if you were watching it, you could kind of feel the tension. And there's been times in the past where Matsuyama has had leads on Sundays and he's kind of fallen apart. And you're kind of sitting back and you're wondering, look, is he gonna crumble under the pressure? Is Schauffele gonna make a charge here and come out of nowhere and just steal the Masters from him? And unfortunately for Schauffele, he knocked it in the water on 16. He ended up triple bogeying that hole, and that took him out of it. At that point, he was out, and he ended up finishing third, tied with Jordan Spieth. Jordan Spieth played well. He didn't play great, in my opinion. I thought he could have been better, but he played well, and he finished in the top five in another major. So, you know, it seems like Spieth is, you know, he won his tournament. Spieth won the tournament last week down in Texas. He finished in the top five at the Masters. I think Spieth is really starting to figure his golf out again, and that's really nice to see. So when we look at all the other stars that finished in the top 10. You had Jon Rahm, who finished in the top 10, Justin Rose, Patrick Reed, who's a former Masters winner, and Tony Finau. That's a good list of star power. All right, you've got some of the top golfers in the world finishing in the top 10. Justin Rose had a lead going into the weekend, and he just completely fell apart, unfortunately for Rose. Rose reminds me a lot of Lee Westwood, who we talked about a few weeks ago on this podcast. He's another one of those veteran players who's always kind of hung around and been at the top of the leaderboard in majors, but has never been able to really put it together. Tony Finau reminds me a lot of, he's kind of a mix of Ricky Fowler and Sergio Garcia prior to Sergio Garcia winning the Masters. He's a great golfer, easily top 20 in the world, but he's another one that hangs around and hangs around and hangs around at the top of leaderboards, but still hasn't been able to figure it out and just kind of flip that switch and finally win one of those majors. John Rahm is a major winner. And obviously, like I said, Patrick Reed is a former Masters winner. So there we go. And that brings me to Bryson DeChambeau, who was favored by many to be the Masters champion at the end of the weekend. And he struggled throughout the tournament. He barely made the cut. He finished at 5 over, tied for 46th. And he looked terrible. He could not figure out his swing to save his life. He's never finished higher than, I think, 25th. Might even be lower than that, but at least 25th in his Masters career. So Augusta is not his tournament at all. But I've never seen a player almost be so absent-minded out there on the course. Like, you've seen players struggle. Like, I'm going to get on Rory in a second. And Rory is, I don't know what's going on with Rory McIlroy. But DeChambeau, for somebody who's supposed to be, as people call him, the scientist out there. Like, that's what the commentators call him, the scientist. He sits there and he's really analytical about his swing and about what he needs to do to be able to fix his swing. Well, that science wasn't working for him because his swing looked terrible. His drives were spraying all over the course, and he was constantly hitting the ball long. Like, he could not figure out his distances with his irons. He looked terrible. There's no other way to put it. He looked terrible. Augusta is not his tournament, and we'll see what he can do as the season progresses. So let's get into Rory McIlroy for a second. Both he and defending champ Dustin Johnson did not make the cut. Look, I'm not concerned about Dustin Johnson whatsoever. Johnson's, in my opinion, still the best golfer in the world as it stands right now. He'll be fine. Rory, on the other hand, I don't know what's wrong with him. There is something very wrong in his game. He does not look comfortable, and it's becoming painful to watch. As somebody who obviously roots for McIlroy, I'm a big fan of his. It sucks watching him play golf right now because he seems to be so in his own head. And it's funny because for those of you out there who play golf, you know exactly what that feels like. And look, again, I suck at golf. I'm not out here trying to act like I'm some pro's pro who can dissect anybody's golf game. But I am somebody who gets in my own head when I'm not playing well at all. And it's if you play with your friends, and I've got great friends that I play with, they're always like, dude, get out of your own head, man. Just swing. You'll figure it out. It's not the end of the world. And obviously we're just playing a fun game. We're not playing on the PGA Tour. With Rory, it's obviously a much more serious issue. But he is so in his own head. It sucks. Like, his body language is awful out there, and it's painful to watch. So I don't know what he's got to do to refigure out his swing or what, but he's got a lot of work to do, both I think physically and mentally. All right, so that brings me to the Masters as a whole. Now, was this Masters the most exciting Masters of all time? Absolutely not. Was it still compelling? I thought so. It's the Masters, the pageantry. It's an exciting tournament to watch. It's, for my money, the best golf tournament of the year. It's certainly the best golf major of the year. So there are quite a few articles that I was reading on social media. There was one in particular by a guy named Tim Couch, who works for Outkick, the coverage. And his article talked about how the Masters was just not worth watching because Tiger Woods wasn't a part of it. There's much more to the Masters than that. And to just be that simplistic of saying, well, in his article, he was pretty much saying, you know, if Tiger Woods had been a part of the Masters, it would have been more watchable. But this Masters was just terrible because Tiger wasn't a part of it. Okay, well, what if Tiger was a part of it, but he didn't make it into the weekend? He didn't make the cut. You're still going to tell me that you would have watched the Masters? Because what it sounds like is you're just a Tiger Woods fanboy, which is fine. but you're only going to tune into the Masters. You're only going to tune into golf tournaments because Tiger Woods is there. Well, that's fine. Then you're not really a golf fan. You're a Tiger Woods fan, and that's okay. But don't trash the tournament just because your guy wasn't in it. Like, you're not, you're people, writers like this who are throughout sports, who just live and die by Tiger Woods. If you're a, you should not be considered a golf analyst because you're not a golf analyst. You're a Tiger Woods analyst, and you're not helping the sport of golf by riding and dying with majors or with golf tournaments on, only if Tiger Woods is a part of it. There are plenty of other superstars, and I've listed them in the first part of this segment. There are plenty of people to root for. There are plenty of players that have a ton of potential who are going to be multiple major winners. And that's what golf needs. There's never going to be another Tiger Woods. So everybody out there who keeps, who are saying Jordan Spieth is the next Tiger Woods, Rory McIlroy is the next Tiger Woods, it's no different than in the NBA when you had Tracy McGrady out there for a while, and people were like, ooh, that's the next Michael Jordan, or Kobe Bryant, ooh, that's the next Michael Jordan, LeBron James, ooh, that's the next Michael Jordan. That's a mistake that both leagues, sports writers, and even fans, you're never going to get the next shooting star. It's not going to happen. You're never going to get another Mike Trout, Tiger Woods, Michael Jordan, Wayne Gretzky. It's never going to happen. They're once-in-a-lifetime athletes. But stop just riding and dying with Tiger Woods, because he may never play golf again. And if he never plays golf again, constantly talking about Tiger Woods and saying, well, this major would have been more fun if Woods was involved, or this would have been much more of a fascinating storyline if Woods was involved, you're not helping your sport. You're hurting it. If you're a true golf fan, you should be looking for ways to uplift the sport. And as somebody who's become a golf fan over the years, like a diehard golf fan, I watch golf every weekend. I am rooting for multiple players. Like, obviously, I've got my favorites. I have my Spieths and my McIlroys, and I like Justin Thomas, Justin Rose, Tony Finau. I'm rooting for now just because I'd like to see the guy get over the hump. I used to root for Ricky Fowler to do the same thing. Now I'm not sure if Fowler's ever going to win a major. But anyway, the point that I'm making is that if you're a golf fan, stop riding and dying with Tiger Woods. He can be your favorite golfer. There's no harm in that. You may think Tiger Woods is the greatest golfer of all time. Again, that's fine. But the sport needs to go on past Tiger Woods. It moved past Arnold Palmer. It moved past Gary Player. It moved past Jack Nicklaus. It's going to move past Phil Mickelson and Tiger Woods. That's just the way it's going. It's going to move forward. And if you keep harping on the past, you're not doing your sport any favors. And it's not like golf is the NBA or the NFL or Major League Baseball. It's not a sport that everybody watches and everybody is gravitating to on a weekly basis. It's a sport that needs a little bit of help. But you're not helping it by constantly bringing up Tiger Woods and using him as a bellwether about whether or not the tournament or the particular major of the weekend is worth watching. It's extremely simplistic. Again, was this Masters the most exciting? No. Could it have been a little bit more exciting? Absolutely. If Dustin Johnson was in contention, that would have made the Masters much more exciting. If Rory McIlroy or Jordan Spieth, the true superstars of this sport, if they were a little bit more competitive, would it have been such a little bit more of an exciting Masters to watch? Absolutely. Without question, you need the superstars in golf to be competitive, to make the tournament as watchable as possible. But what Tim Couch was saying and what others have said is it wouldn't have mattered if Jordan Spieth was in contention. It wouldn't have mattered if Dustin Johnson was going for his second green jacket, if he was in contention on Sunday. The only thing that matters is whether or not Tiger Woods is a part of the Masters or whatever major it is that's going on. And that's such an ignorant point of view. And it's not helping your sport. So people like that just need to shut the hell up. Just shut up, because you're not promoting golf. You're just promoting your particular brand of player, which again is you're obviously entitled to your own opinion. But you can't call yourself a true golf fan or a true golf analyst if all you're going to do is talk about one particular player, Because that you're not doing anything for the sport. If anything, you're diminishing it just to promote that one superstar that you just can't let go of. After 12 years, all with the New England Patriots, Julian Edelman has finally retired. Edelman announced his retirement through a video posted on social media. He said, and I quote, "Nothing in my career has ever come easy, and no surprise, this isn't going to be easy either. I've always said I'll go until the wheels come off, and they finally have fallen off due to an injury last year. I'll be making my official announcement of my retirement from football." And then he put this up a little while later, quote, "It was a hard decision, but the right decision for me and my family, and I'm honored and so proud to be retiring a Patriot. It's been the best 12 years of my life, Foxborough forever," end quote. So if we look at Julian Edelman's career, he was the seventh round of the 2009 NFL draft, and he was the 232nd overall pick. Again, he's a 12-year veteran, all with New England. Second all-time in postseason receptions with 118 behind Jerry Rice, who had 151. He's tied for second with Michael Irvin for postseason games with at least 100 receiving yards, with 6 behind only Jerry Rice, who had 8. He's a 3-time Super Bowl champion, Super Bowl MVP. And as far as the Patriots go, he's second in Patriots team history in receptions with 620 behind Wes Welker, who had 672. He's fourth in receiving yards at 6,822 behind Stanley Morgan, Gronk, and Wes Welker. And he's first in rushing yards by a receiver with 413 yards from 58 rushing attempts. So, like everything, social media has now begun the debate about whether or not Julian Edelman is a Hall of Famer. The majority of the posts that I've read on social media is that Julian Edelman is not a Hall of Famer. And I think those people are dead wrong. Given his stats, specifically his postseason statistics, and how clutch he's come up in some of the biggest games, specifically the shoestring catch that he had, which was a part of the greatest comeback in Super Bowl history in Super Bowl 51 against the Atlanta Falcons, I don't know how you can't put this dude in the Hall of Fame. I'm not saying he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. He may not even be a second ballot Hall of Famer. But the guy has 3 Super Bowl rings and a Super Bowl MVP. He's a Hall of Famer. His regular season statistics might not blow you away, but can you think of another player, another receiver in this era, who's made more clutch postseason grabs than Julian Edelman? I'm serious about this. Think really hard. How many receivers have made like that one play, that signature play that defined a team's Super Bowl run? The problem is that you can't, because Tom Brady has been winning practically every Super Bowl over the past 5 years. So there's that. Think back. How many receivers? I'm talking about Super Bowl winning receivers, not just receivers in general, because obviously we can go down the litany of who's the best receiver in football right now. That's not what I'm saying. I would never say Julian Edelman is one of the greatest receivers of all time when it comes to regular season statistics. But if we're talking postseason, you name me a better wide receiver aside from Jerry Rice, maybe Reggie Wayne or Marvin Harrison in this era. Possibly Randy Moss, even though Randy Moss never won a Super Bowl. Give me another receiver that you would want in crunch time, aside from Julian Edelman. Because I can't think of too many. And that's my point. Is you can balk at his regular season statistics and say, look, he was never considered like a top 5 or top 10 regular season wide receiver. And I'd say, yeah, you're absolutely right. He was 5'9". No one would ever sit there and think that a 5'9" wide receiver is going to be considered a top wide receiver in football. That goes without question. But again, 3rd and 8, your team desperately needs a first down. Who's going to get you that first down? Julian Edelman. Because he did it time and time again for the Patriots. Sure, he had Tom Brady throwing him the ball. But Tom Brady, as we've seen, Tom Brady is all about timing. And there was nobody that he trusted more out there than Julian Edelman. Sure, he could throw the ball up to Gronk because Gronk is the Incredible Hulk out there. No one's going to take him down. Anybody could take down Julian Edelman. I mean, no offense to Edelman. He's a tough, scrappy dude. But again, he's 5'9". The majority of the cornerbacks that were guarding him were probably, what, 4, 5, 6 inches taller than him. It wasn't like Edelman was going to win a jump ball. That dude hustled, he was smart, and he knew how to get open. So I think anybody out there who is just poo-pooing the idea that Julian Edelman should be in the Hall of Fame might want to go back and re-watch some of those Super Bowls and re-watch just Julian Edelman on YouTube. Because that guy was unbelievably incredible. And this is coming from somebody who rooted against him practically his entire career because he was on New England. But I can promise you, I would have loved him on the teams I was rooting for. I would have loved him in Indianapolis. I would have loved him in Denver when Peyton Manning was there. Instead, we got a washed-up Wes Welker. But the point that I'm making is Julian Edelman's a Hall of Famer. I don't think that there's any argument against that. You can't have that type of postseason resume, 3 Super Bowls and a Super Bowl MVP, and not be in the Hall of Fame. I'm sorry. You can't be. He was one of, if not the most important receiver for New England when it came to winning those 3 Super Bowls. He came up with the plays that Gronkowski couldn't. In a lot of those games, big games, Gronkowski was injured. He wasn't even available. So you guys can bring up Gronkowski all you want. That's what a lot of the arguments were. Well, you know, he wasn't as good as Gronk. What are you talking about? He was better than Gronk because he was available. Gronkowski wasn't. You want to bring up the PEDs thing? Because that was the other thing I saw people were, you know, bringing up the PEDs, how he was suspended for PEDs. He was suspended for PEDs. He came back after the suspension and won Super Bowl MVP that same season after serving his suspension. What does that tell you about him? So, look, the debate's going to rage on in New England circles, and you know, no one's really going to make this obviously this isn't going to be like a national debate for a long period of time. But I just think if you're overlooking Julian Edelman, you're definitely doing him a disservice. For my money, this dude is absolutely a Hall of Famer. Another week, another Twitter feud for Kevin Durant. This guy just can't stay off of social media. So this week, Brooklyn star Kevin Durant is in it with professional trash talker Shannon Sharpe. And I say professional trash talker because Shannon Sharpe just trash talks on Undisputed all the time. And it was pretty funny. Kevin Durant took a screenshot of the fact that Shannon Sharpe blocked him. And he tweeted, and I quote, "But I'm sensitive," end quote, which I think is hilarious. And Sharp's maneuver came just a few hours after Durant referred to Sharp as a quote unquote drunk uncle after attributing an allegedly fake quote to Durant on Undisputed. So on Undisputed, Shannon Sharpe said, and I quote, "Kevin Durant thought by winning the title, people would regard him universally as the best player in the NBA, better than even LeBron James. But very few people were willing to go there." And then he's like, because he said it, "If LeBron James is the GOAT, I beat the GOAT twice, and he hit the shot in his building. What does that make me?" End quote. Durant followed by insisting that he never said the things that Sharpe attributed to him. Now, I never heard Kevin Durant say those things. I don't remember anybody quoting Kevin Durant as of saying those things. So there's a few things here. Number one, I am pro petty Kevin Durant. I find pro-petty Kevin Durant to be very entertaining. He's obviously mentally weak. There's no question about that. So, look, if you want to talk about him off the court, the guy clearly has rabbit ears about people who trash talk him. And that's true. But on the court, it clearly doesn't affect Kevin Durant because the dude balls out. He does. There's no question about it. Kevin Durant is, what, the second, third best player in the world? So he's maintained his top three basketball player in the world status over the past 5, 6, 7 years. So he can compartmentalize his pettiness, which for me, I have no problem with it. Now, if this was affecting Kevin Durant on the court and he was playing like James Harden does when it comes to the postseason, then there's a bigger problem. But Kevin Durant seems to use it as fuel for himself. And it's funny because Shannon Sharpe is somebody, and this is the other part I want to get to. Shannon Sharpe will defend LeBron James to the T. Everything LeBron James does. You want to talk about Captain Petty? There's nobody more petty than LeBron James. Throughout his career, the dude has been petty about everything under the sun. He's Captain Passive Aggressive. Think about the amount of times everyone talks about how great of a teammate LeBron James is. There have been numerous times where LeBron James has been passive aggressive with his teammates, passive aggressive with his coaches, passive aggressive with ownership. And there's Shannon Sharp sitting there with his pom-poms and his little cheerleading outfit, pro LeBron, wearing his stupid-ass goat mask on Undisputed. Has no problem with LeBron James being petty, saying stupid shit to the media. No issue with it. But we'll go after Kevin Durant any opportunity he has. And why is that? Well, because Kevin Durant is a threat to LeBron James and LeBron James' legacy. He is. No one wants to talk about it. But if Kevin Durant wins one, two, three more rings, it's going to hurt LeBron. It is. It hurts. You can't. I'm going to go down a quick rabbit hole here. Think about when Michael Jordan played basketball. Think about all the superstars that played basketball while Michael Jordan was at his apex. Nobody won titles. During Michael Jordan's career, he prevented stars like Charles Barkley, Karl Malone, and others from winning NBA championships. While LeBron James has been in the league, think about all the superstars that have won championships. Steph Curry, Tim Duncan, Kevin Durant, Kawhi Leonard. Superstars in this league have been able to win while LeBron James's quote-unquote reign in the league. That hurts LeBron James. And if Kevin Durant, again, like I said, if he ties LeBron in rings, so let's say they both retire and both KD and LeBron, who played each other in both of their primes, come out with four rings, then LeBron James, did he really reign over the NBA? The answer, of course, to that is absolutely not. He did not reign his kingdom over the NBA, because other superstars were able to beat him or best him and win titles. So Shannon Sharp going at Kevin Durant every opportunity he has is just because he's a LeBron James fanboy. And Kevin Durant is obviously an easy target, because whether Sharp did it on purpose or not, he knew it would get to KD, and KD would probably make a comment about it. But again, the fact that Shannon Sharp doesn't have the backbone to stand up to KD, rather he's just going to block him, just shows how weak Shannon Sharp truly is, and shows that he's truly a coward. At the end of the day, though, none of us really win when you have these types of social media. Well, I mean, I take that back. We win, but because it's entertaining. But neither Shannon Sharp nor Kevin Durant are ever going to come out looking good in these situations, because whenever you have social media beefs like this, everybody loses, meaning the people who are involved, because it's not a good look. It just looks petty by both people, and it doesn't do anything to enhance them, I don't think, in the public sphere. Steph Curry is now the Warriors' all-time leading scorer. Curry scored 53 points in the Warriors' 116-107 victory over the Denver Nuggets Monday night. Those 53 points helped Curry top Wilt Chamberlain's 17,783 points as the all-time leading scorer in Warriors history. This is an excerpt from ESPN. Quote, Curry's record-setting basket came on a driving layup with 1:40 left in the first quarter. Needing just 19 points to surpass Chamberlain, Curry finished with 21 in the first quarter. End quote. So Curry becomes the seventh player in NBA history to record multiple seasons with three or more 50-point games, the ninth time in his career he has scored 50 or more points. Monday also marked the 18th time in Curry's career that he has had 10 or more three-pointers in a game. So I'm going to bring this up again. I talked about this, I don't know, a little over a month ago on this pod, and I brought up the fact that I believe that there's never been a player since Michael Jordan that has impacted the game in such a meaningful way than Steph Curry. In Curry's 12-year career in the NBA, he has transcended the way that we watch and that we all collectively play the game of basketball. His three-point marksmanship has become idolized by basketball players at every level. By the way, he's got a career 43.3% from three, which is just absurd. And I think what might be his greatest accomplishment that has been completely overlooked is, and what I think links him closer to Michael Jordan than maybe anything else, is that in this era that has been defined by the player movement, Curry's even more impressive because he has stayed with Golden State while repeatedly saying that he only wants to wear one jersey during his career. Now, I know Jordan left the Bulls and played for the Wizards at the end of his career. But when you think about it, Michael Jordan never teamed up with other superstars in the league the way that we've seen LeBron do multiple times, Kawhi, Paul George, Durant, Harden, etc. We've seen all of these other superstars in the NBA team up with other superstars in the NBA to create mini all-star teams in order to win championships. Steph Curry hasn't done that. Now, he has benefited from other superstars wanting to come and play with him, but Michael Jordan didn't leave the Bulls to go, you know, team up with Charles Barkley, Karl Malone, and Gary Payton and try and put together a mini Olympic dream team to win a title. He went to the Wizards. He was fed up with the Bulls organization and the Bulls franchise, and he moved on. You know, I get where people are like, yeah, but you just made the comment about how Curry only wants to wear one jersey in his career. You know, Michael Jordan didn't do that. Well, yeah, okay. But how many people sit back and think about Michael Jordan in a Wizards uniform? You think about Michael Jordan in a Bulls uniform. It's no different than you think of Joe Montana in a 49ers uniform. When you think about LeBron James, what uniform are you going to think about LeBron James in? Miami? Cleveland? The Lakers? You've got three to choose from. That's the difference. Is that when you think of Steph Curry, when you think of Michael Jordan, you think of them in one uniform and one uniform alone. That's the point I'm trying to make. But getting back to the whole player empowerment movement, jumping around from team to team thing. Think about the fact that players have wanted to come to Steph to play with Steph Curry. And I believe that if Michael Jordan played in this era, the NBA players would be tripping over themselves to play with him in Chicago. It certainly wouldn't be the other way around. Michael Jordan wouldn't be looking for an easy out. Now, would MJ turn down other stars wanting to come and play with him? Probably not. I mean, think about when he was with the Bulls. Scottie Pippen came, played with him. Dennis Rodman came and played with him. And others. Like, people were gravitating to the Bulls because of the greatness of Michael Jordan. People have been gravitating to the Warriors because of the greatness of Steph. And I think that's something that is constantly overlooked with Steph. People like to trash Steph Curry. I've said it before, and I'm going to keep saying it. I'm going to keep harping on it. For whatever reason, Steph Curry is the most underrated player, superstar, maybe ever in sports. He's constantly disrespected by other his peers, other superstars in the league. Overlook Steph Curry all the time. And they completely discount him. I don't know if it's jealousy. I don't know if it's just the fact that he's a point guard and he's not exactly the biggest dude in the world. I don't know. I truly don't understand. I've never seen somebody so maligned by other stars. I don't get it. I mean, a lot of me does believe that again, these players are petty and they're jealous. I know LeBron James, you will never, ever be able to convince me that LeBron James wasn't losing his mind over the fact that people were gravitating towards Steph and moving away from him. And yeah, did LeBron come back in 2016, had the best finals comeback of all time? Sure, absolutely. Do I think a lot of that was motivation because he was pissed off and irritated that so many people were thinking that or considering Steph Curry to be the greatest basketball player in the world? Yeah, absolutely. And did LeBron James shut that conversation down? Yes, he did. That you can never make the argument that Steph Curry is better than LeBron James. I would never even make that argument. As much as I love Steph Curry and I loathe LeBron James, I would never, ever say that. In the pantheon of basketball players, I'm never going to sit there and say Steph Curry is better than LeBron. But I will be able to say that Steph Curry is more comparable to Michael Jordan than LeBron James. That you can say without any question. When you look at the impact that Steph Curry has had on the game of basketball, and you look at the impact and you compare it to the impact that Michael Jordan has had on the game of basketball, there is no question about it. None. I don't care how much you love LeBron James, you cannot make that comparison because it's not true. So congratulations to Steph on another accomplishment in his already Hall of Fame career. And I look forward to when Steph calls it quits and they build a statue for him outside the Chase Arena in San Francisco. I hope it's one with him chewing on his mouthpiece, because I think that would be just completely symbolic of the type of player that Steph is, or at least the type of player that he seems to be. Somebody who's relatively carefree, who's out there having a good time, loves to win, and seems to be somebody that other players just gravitate to. Sure, like I said before, there may be some superstars out there that still don't respect Steph for whatever their reasons are. Like I said, I think a lot of it is just pettiness and jealousy. But there are plenty of other stars, even if they won't admit it publicly, that would love to play with Steph. He just has that natural charisma and leadership ability that I believe a lot of players are attracted to. He's a team first guy. And again, he's going to go down as one of the greatest basketball players of all time. I come on here every once in a while before I close out a pod to give a shout out to all of you who continue to download. And I'm going to do that again, because the numbers, not just for this podcast, but for Drinks with Dan, Richo's Rant, Richo and Lala and Spaceball, have been incredible. And that's a testament to all of you who take the time to download and listen to all the various podcasts we bring you from this network. And it means a lot to us. You know, we put a lot of time into this. We really enjoy what we do, but there would be no us without you. We wouldn't just continue to make podcasts if no one was taking the time to listen. So for those of you who have stuck by us from the beginning, and for those of you who are new to what we are doing here at the network, thank you. Thank you for your continued love and support. It means more than words can express, and we look forward to bringing more entertaining and exciting content to you in the future. All right, everybody, that's going to do it for this week's edition of the LaValley Sports Talk Podcast, brought to you by Soundline Network. As always, thank you so much for tuning and listening. We greatly appreciate it. Please be sure to check us out on iTunes, subscribe, rate, and review. And while you're there, we got plenty of other podcasts for you, including Drinks with Dan, Spaceball, Richo's Rant, and Richo and Lala. That's it. That's all I have for you this week. I hope you all be well and stay safe. Talk to you all again soon.